You've tuned in to the most crazy rocking metal podcast on the air. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Metal from the Inside.
What is going on, everybody? I'm Sydney Taylor, and you are listening to the Metal from the Inside podcast. This is episode 41. Thank you guys so much for tuning into another episode and joining me for another week. Now, I know that it has been a hot minute since I have posted a brand new episode of the podcast, and there are a couple reasons for this. One of the reasons being that the entire month of May, the last couple weeks of May specifically, I had a bunch of family events, including I finally got to officially graduate from college. I had a cousin's wedding, I had lots of birthdays, and you know, as we know, we are getting close to the other side of this pandemic completely, and life is getting back to some kind of normalcy. And that just meant a lot of different events, seeing a lot of different people now that we're all vaccinated, or I'm vaccinated, and a lot of my friends and family are as well. So finally getting to see people and all of that stuff. So I took about a month off, or honestly a little bit more than a month off of the podcast, to just get back into the normal swing of life that is pre-pandemic. And or I guess post-pandemic, but you know, life, what life was like before the pandemic, and just reorganize things. You know, I had been doing the podcast, or I have been doing the podcast, you know, since March of 2020 and through the entirety of the pandemic, and I really truthfully just needed a month and a half to take a little bit of a breather and get myself together, and that is exactly what I did, and we are officially back 100%, and this week I have a super fun episode, and it's more of kind of a conversational episode, which I have been looking to do for a while on the podcast. You know, every week I have on a musician or somebody, you know, very notable in the music industry, specifically obviously in the hard rock and heavy metal genre, on to talk about their music or their producing, etc. But this time I had two of my friends, Mr. Jack Frost and Mr. Rich Gattino, join me to talk all things 80s glam metal, which if you know me and know all of the bands that I love, you would know why I was so excited to do this episode. You know, Rich Gattino is a fellow Hudson Valley Square on Sea of Tranquility, and he's also one of my team members for Brave Words. We're two of the only people really on Sea Tranquility who really love the 80s glam scene, you know, everything from Winger to, I don't know, Whitesnake, if you want to consider them glam, you know, everything in between those two bands that I just stated. But we're one of the, you know, we're two of the only people who really are into that. So Rich messaged me, you know, we were talking, and he was like, you know, we should totally do an episode all about these bands and underrated bands, bands that we love, bands, you know, that we got into, and, you know, me loving all of that, you know, type of music and all of those bands. I was like, man, this is a great idea. And Rich brought along his friend, and now my friend, Jack Frost, who has played in a myriad of different bands, including Sabotage. He has worked with Joey Belladonna. He is now playing with Aldo Nova, a bunch of different bands, and he's currently working on a brand new record that features a lot of the vocalists that we talk about, actually, in this episode. You know, Keith St. John, who I had on the podcast a while back at this point, but a lot of different people. So he's working on that record, which he talks a little bit about as well. But, you know, he was very much around and loving this type of music when a lot of these bands came, you know, to the top and came to fruition, and you know, he loves this music just as much as me and Rich. So I figured we got all three of us together, we talk about all of our favorite 80s metal bands, 80s glam bands. I refuse to really call them hair bands, and yes, I am using quotation marks, even though you can't see me, because I think that these bands are so much more than just their image, although I personally love their image, and we're going to get into that in the episode as well, and, you know, kind of the controversy about the terminology that is often used for a lot of the bands that we talk about. So I think this is a really fun episode to kind of come back with and get you guys back into listening to the podcast, but have no fear, we will be back to scheduled programming next week. I'm actually talking to my friend Don Jameson and we are talking about some bands that we love, which I'll reveal kind of the topic as we get a little bit closer, but we're back with Dawn next week, and we've got some more really exciting guests in the future. So I do greatly apologize for my absence, but like I mentioned, I really just needed a little bit of a break, and I feel so much better and so inspired and refreshed and ready to come back strong with the podcast. So thank you guys so much for bearing with me. And again, I've gotten so much love on my interview with Alice Cooper, even now almost 2 months after I posted it, and it makes me feel so great that you guys enjoyed that interview so much, and I'm still getting messages and stuff about that interview. So thank you guys so much if you have ever taken the time, you know, to listen to an episode, and especially that episode with Alice, because that episode meant a lot to me, and I think it meant a lot to you guys too. So, but anyways, we are officially back with the Metal from the Inside podcast every single Friday. If you guys would like to purchase Metal from the Inside merchandise, official Metal from the Inside merchandise, you can go to www.season-of-mist.com, type Metal from the Inside into the search bar, and our shirt with the flame logo should pop right up. Here you can purchase the Metal from the Inside logo on pretty much any single garment that you can think of. Everything from short sleeves to long sleeves, hoodies, zip-ups, women's cut shirts, tank tops, muscle tanks, all of that fun stuff. So you can go ahead and go to Season of Mist's official website to purchase Metal from the Inside merchandise. The team over at Season of Mist have been just so great, and I love working with them. They're, again, a label that is really, really local to me. Their headquarters are in Philly, and I have a lot of friends that work for Season of Mist, and they have some incredible heavy, you know, death metal, black metal bands on the label that I love. So I'm always so honored that they want to carry my merchandise and, you know, get my merch out there to all of you. So if you would like to purchase, that is the website that you can find the Metal from the Inside merchandise at. And if you do purchase a shirt, hoodie, muscle tank, whatever, please be sure to send me a picture of you guys wearing the shirt or the tank or the zip up or the hoodie, whatever you guys purchased. I would love to share it on the social media, share it with all of our listeners, and thank you for actually purchasing something and representing the podcast. So be sure to send me a picture, post on social media, tag us in it, all of that fun stuff, and we would absolutely love to share it. So without further ado, you guys have waited long enough for a brand new episode of the Metal from the Inside podcast. When we get back from this very short break, we are going to get right into my conversation with Jack Frost and Rich Catino all about 80s hard rock. What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the Metal from the Inside podcast. And this is kind of a different episode that we have this week, and one that I'm really happy for. I have two very awesome guests joining me, Mr. Jack Frost, who has worked with Sabotage, Lizzie Borden, Joey Belladonna. He's currently working on a brand new record with a ton of different singers that have been in bands that we're going to mention today, and is a fellow metal fan, along with Mr. Rich Catino, who is working with me on Sea of Tranquility. He is a co-host with me on the Hudson Valley Squares and is also part of the Brave Words team as well, and has Metal Asylum, which is his own site as well. So thank you guys so much for joining me on this fun episode we're about to do on glam metal, hair metal, as many people say. So thank you guys.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, look metal. At that. See, those are all the hard rock bands we're going to talk about today. It's just...
Can everybody see? Can you see? Vintage Baby, Rough Cut. There you go.
Oh God, this is going to be fun. So, I mean, if you guys are familiar with me, you guys know I'm a huge fan of all of these different types of band that, you know, obviously kind of gets labeled under the moniker of, you know, hair metal and, but mostly are just hard rock bands to me, just kind of good old hard rock bands that of course were around in the 1980s. So Jack, I'm going to start with you. Give us a little bit of a rundown on kind of maybe your first memories of maybe not even just getting into metal, but kind of getting into this, these types of bands that kind of went on to kind of be labeled as hair metal or glam metal per se.
Well, you know, first of all, I appreciate you having me on the show, and this is like going to be so amazing. So let's make this easy. Growing up, my brother had me into like Zeppelin and the Stones and everything. But for me, what really caught my attention was Kiss. Literally, I had my own money and my dad took me to a store and I bought my first album ever, and it was double platinum. I loved it so much because it was like platinum and you could actually see yourself in it. I'm always looking at it going, that's going to be me someday. I love Kiss. I love Kiss. And that really just started me like, it's pretty funny. A lot of guys from, of course I'm from Jersey, but I grew up in Jersey City. So a lot of the guys were more into the thrash scene, like, you know, Attacker guys and Hades, Allen and all them. And I was the quintessential poser. Like I had the hair out to here. And it was, to me, it was all about the look and the playing. And they used to bust my chops. Oh, dude, you're crazy. But I just love that style of music. So from Kiss, you know, of course I listened to Sweet and, you know, a lot of bands like that. But once the scene, like the Lamours started to open up and all that stuff, I used to go see Twisted Sister as a kid. And, you know, they were a cover band. And you just see this. So like, for me, it gradually started from Kiss to Twisted Sister. Of course, I love Black Sabbath and I love Rainbow and I love Purple. But as times went by, I got to be honest, probably the first band that really, probably going to get yelled at and shot for saying this, but I was in Wildwood, New Jersey on my summer vacation with my family and the Runaway video came on. New band, Bon Jovi. I'm like, what's this? And I was like, oh my God, that is exactly what I want to do. And from there, you know, it was Bon Jovi. And then, you know, we were back in those days, we didn't have YouTube and have all this stuff. Yeah. We would tape trade. Everyone would tape trade. They're like, you got to hear this band, Motley Crue. And it was like a demo. And you see these guys on the front. And it was like, what is this? So for me, it definitely was that really got me into it. It was Bon Jovi and, you know, Crue. And then bands like Rat, they didn't have a record out yet. I mean, it was like, you know, they didn't even make their EP yet. It was like, so that's where it kind of gradually started for me was that whole, I was born in the wrong area. I should have lived in LA back then because that scene was so embedded into me. So that's kind of where I started from. I would say Bon Jovi. And then from there, it was like, you know, Rat and Crue. And that's where it kind of started.
Jack, do you remember the U68 channel we had?
Well, that was a really weird station because if you didn't have cable, and back in those days, you know, you had your antenna with the silver foil on it, right? Everyone will get that. And I remember seeing bands like, it was like singer from Brooklyn, New York, and band from Norway, TNT. And there was a band called, a local band called Monroe, Billy C from Monroe. He had a video on there. And that really, it's funny you say that, Rich. That was before any of that stuff. A lot of these bands you didn't know, like, you know, U68 would play Razor. And they would play like the First Reaper. And
First Striper, Soldiers Under Command. Yeah, that's how I saw the video for Soldiers Under Command. That's it here in my pile. That's what, 84 or 85? 85?
Might be 85. I think 84 was the EP, right? Loud and Clear. Yeah, that was before that. But it's funny, you have the records. I remember, look how great that is. It's amazing. Awesome. I remember like being, you know, 15 and you were allowed to go on a subway back then and didn't have to worry about anything negative. Like in this world, we would go to New York City. My dad gave me $10 and I would go to St. Mark's Place. And honestly, for $10, I'd come home with 10 records and I would pick up, you know, the EP Rat, the Striper EP. And it was, that really got me into it.
Rich, what was it like for you? What was your kind of beginnings in this?
I think it was probably Mental Health, Quiet Riot, seeing that in the store. Because that was huge. That was a number one album.
First metal, right? First metal ever go number one.
Yeah, that's 83. So, yep. I mean, I liked Kiss. And I remember I have a picture of myself holding the Iron Maiden Number of the Beast tape. So I probably started around 82 getting this stuff. And Kiss Creatures of the Night. But when they had videos and you could actually see them on MTV.
Yeah.
So Come On, Feel the Noise was huge. That was playing at roller rinks and on the radio. It was all over the place. So they really opened the doors for everybody, you know? So them and then the U68 channel. So I remember seeing Soldiers Under Command from Striper. Like these are all originals I got when I was a kid. First Motley Crue album, Bon Jovi, In and Out of Love, and Runaway. Love this album. This is such a great.
In and Out of Love is such a great song, dude. Oh.
Yeah. It's a great record. That's a great record.
Yeah. And MTV was starting to play a little bit of like Night Ranger, first album. Right.
Don't Tell Me You Love Me was probably the first song they released.
Yep. Great hard rocker there. And then, like, you know, the other bands I started getting into at the same time was the first Great White.
Stick It.
Great album. Tree Killer, Nightmares. Love this album. This is such a good album. Of course, the first Rat, that was huge. You know, Round and Round was on MTV. I remember seeing Rough Cut on U68, right?
They did the Janis Joplin song, Take It.
Yes.
Another Piece of My Heart. Yep.
Heart. I'm thinking the song Take Her, but Piece of My Heart was the video.
Piece of My Heart, yep.
Right. And then, of course, I remember seeing Twisted Sister, You Can't Stop Rock and Roll. That was another video at the time.
That was the jeans days. They were still...
You know, it's great too, though. You call it glam metal, hair metal, whatever you want to call it. I call it hard rock metal. But if you look here, Twisted Sister wear jeans and t-shirts.
Yeah.
And also the glam too. So they really did a little bit of both, actually.
They were one of the first. They were one of the real first ones.
Yeah.
I mean,
absolutely.
You look at like Kiss, who then, you know, took off the makeup, and they had, I mean, there were periods of Kiss though where I feel like they were still glam, like when they did like Asylum and things like that. But like, yeah, they're also, yeah, you know, they came out in the Look It Up video and they still had like a little bit of the outfits, but it wasn't, you right. know, like it was, you know, you can kind of see that.
No, it was a little more like Twisted Sister here with the jeans and the t-shirt.
Yeah.
You know, and the leather. What else? I got two more from that era. The first White Lion, Fight to Survive. Talk about metal. This is a metal album.
Dude, they used to sell out Lemours 2-3 nights in a row. We used to go see them on that record, before that record came out, with a different bass player and a different drummer. And, I mean, Dave the Beast from Black Sabbath and Leader Ford was the bass player. They could sell out Lemours 2 nights in a row without trying. Always.
How about the first Europe?
Oh, yeah, man.
The second album. This is the second one. This is the first one.
Both amazing. Right?
Yeah, Europe's another one of those I feel like are super underrated. You know, there's so much more than the Final Countdown, man. If you just really kind of get into early records.
Yeah, especially if you listen to these, this is much more of a metal record, you know. Very very melodic, but still metal edged, right?
But you can definitely hear the Yngwie in there from they come from. But Norum, the guitar player, is such a Gary Moore guy. I mean, I don't know if people even know this. I mean, it depends, but you know how many more records have Europe have out now? Like the last 5 years, they put out 4 stellar albums that it's very Deep Purple, Rainbow, but that's where they come from. And it's, you know, Joey still sounds amazing. Like,
amazing.
Great voice. And I mean, you know, they stood the test of time.
All these albums, I think they stood the test of time. Because it's the first wave, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
And then I got two more. Of course, Lita Ford, right? Gotta Let Go and Dress.
Who plays drums on that? Who plays drums on that? Who plays drums
Randy
on
Castillo.
That?
Randy
That's
Castillo.
Right. God bless him, man. What a great drummer.
Yeah, he's on the back there.
Yeah.
And of course, Doc and Breaking the Chains.
Gotta have him. You gotta have
Phenomenal. Him. Phenomenal.
Gotta have it there. You know what I wish I had, though, and I don't? The one where it was called Don Dock and Breaking the Chains.
Oh, my gosh. I looked for that so much. It's the original German pressing of him, and he's wearing the like cheetah print, and it's freaking killer. I'm like, I wish I could. It's so rare. Wow.
Yeah,
that's one to get, man.
Yep, it is.
And I bet you a lot of people don't know who plays bass on that record. It's not Pilsen.
No, it is not Pilsen. Oh. It is somebody.
It's not Pilsen.
It's Juan from
Juan.
Rat. Yeah.
Juan. Yep, from Rat. Juan. Yeah. Yep. He's on the back there.
Yep, there he is. It's great.
Yeah, Pilsen came in and he did the videos for that record, but he didn't actually.
Right. He's Breaking the Chains video. Yep.
Yep.
But yeah, that's how I got into it, from Choir Riot and Twisted Sister. But a year earlier, I remember getting Creatures of the Night, Number of the Beast, maybe a couple other albums. But Choir Riot and Twisted Sister really opened the door in '83 for me to find out about all those bands.
But see, the thing is, like, you're talking about that. I guess, like, I don't want to like make it sound bad, but you know, growing up, it was AC/DC, Iron Maiden, and Priest. That was like, you know, that's if you were into metal and rock, that was it. Those bands are great. And a lot of my friends, they stayed. I mean, not that I didn't love Maiden and Priest later on, but I kind of went more towards, okay, get me a can of All Set. I want to spray my hair upside down. And, you know, what makes me mad the most about people when they talk about the 80s, you know what? Those guitar players, they could play. Everyone could play. And I think that's the thing where people, I don't know if we're going to get into this yet about hair metal and everything. They're like, oh, it's hair metal. But you know what? I embrace that because it's the people that are like, I don't want to be known for that. What don't you want to be known for? It was the greatest time in the world. Life was fun. The music was real. And honestly, the players could play. I mean, guys like Warren DeMartini, George Lynch, those guys were on fire as players. But, you know, I guess the hairspray and the makeup, it kind of diluted what they were coming from. It really bums me out when you really think about it, you know?
Yeah. To me, though, I like kind of looking back on that time, because, I mean, for me, it was different. I didn't actually get to live that time, which I talk about all the time, you know. But for me, like, I grew up, my parents were around and they were, you know, fans when all those bands were coming out. And, you know, I kind of grew up listening to Motley Crue. I mean, the first really kind of record that I remember loving that, I guess you could say, is this kind of period of hard rock was like the first Skid Row album that I loved. I mean, I saw Sebastian Bach for the first time when I was 7, and I loved 18 in Life, and it was like my favorite song in the freaking world. And, you know, Dokken and all these bands, and, you know, I kind of grew up listening to them. So it's interesting kind of seeing how people hated the image so much, because I mean, I was just somebody, when I look back on that, it's, to me, the image is just such a fun part of it. And I've always loved, you know, kind of how that kind of existed in that period of time. But, you know, it's funny. I've never understood kind of like the metal elitist personality when it's like, you know, you kind of like you were saying, Jack, about like posers and all this stuff. And it's like, dude, it's good music. It's good music. Like who, you know, it's.
Yeah. I think it came later when they started doing all the outfits and you know, too much hairspray and it was too much costumes. Like, if you look at, I call that the first Europe album. If you look at the first Europe album, there's no hairspray.
Right.
Yeah. They're babies, man. They're like 19 years old.
So a lot of, you know, many of these bands, they started out not doing the teased hair, not with the outfits. You know, even Twisted Sister, like I said, with the denim and the leather, you know, even though they have the costumes. Yeah, even though they have the costumes too. So if you're going to, you know, you're going to punish a band just because they wore big hair, you know, the costumes with the big hair, and you didn't think they were metal enough, but they still had that, you know, the metal edge and the riffs, then why punish them for the outfits and everything? Because everybody had them in the 80s, you know?
Yeah. But are you going to sit there after all these years and put down Aerosmith? Let's talk about Quintessential frontman. Steven Tyler had more, you know, scarves and stuff and on his mic stand than anybody in the world. And you know what? That was the 70s. So you can't say, I mean, Alice Cooper, I mean, it was about the show. What's wrong? Like, I don't understand. Like, I have a lot of friends from a lot of those bands, and we're all tight. And sometimes I'll talk to them like, yeah, I'm so ashamed. How are you ashamed of something? It's like saying you had a child and, I don't know, he didn't do good in sports, so you're ashamed of him? It's almost like that was your baby. And that's why I don't care what anybody says to me. I was called poser, and I'm proud of it. And I can tell you a funny story. This you'll love. I remember 19 years old. I went to Lemoore's to see Manowar. Okay. And my friends picked me up. I was full garped out. Hair was to the top of the car, eyeliner, full on. I get in the car. They're like, you can't go with us to see Manowar. You're going to get shot. I said, I don't care. I went there. I was proud of what I was into. And you know what? They were up there, Death the Force Metal. But you know what? I became good friends with Joey later on in life. And he thought it was cool. He goes, man, everybody has their thing. You believe in what you believe in. That's what shows you as what you are. Because I believed in it and I loved it. So, you know, I have no qualm ever saying that's my era and proud of it.
And you know what? All these bands too, when they were live, they were metal. They weren't like,
You know what? You're showing Night Songs, right? Let's be honest. And if you really want to rip it apart, that record is such a great, if you put them in jeans and a t-shirt, nobody would have said a single thing.
Right.
That record is such a great blues-based rock album. It is. Right. And I'm going to say, I saw Bon Jovi, New Year's Eve. And you know who the opening band was? Cinderella. And I'm going to say it, Rich, and I'm going to get shot. Here it goes. But I was in awe how much Cinderella just destroyed Bon Jovi that night. In their hometown, Brendan Byrne Arena, Cinderella was on fire. I used to go see Cinderella with a different drummer, a different bass player, and a different guitar player. They were playing the Empire and the Galaxy. And some of those guys became Britney Fox. Like, it's Britney Fox too. If you really listen to the records, they're not glam metal. They're, you guys said it. It's four on the floor, rock and roll. It really is. It's where Montrose came from. They took a lot of that first Montrose record, the first 2 hours of the records, and so they put a little hairspray, and the producers made the stuff more polished. You know, if you listen to records, you know, you listen to first Van Halen, it's raw.
Yeah.
They just cleaned it up a little bit and made it, you know, that's all.
Yeah.
But
more radio, I guess, accessible and, you know, more polished. Polished. But what's wrong with writing a great song? It's still,
A good song is a good song. That's it.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, like I was going to say, I can kind of see, you know, to me, it gets a little bit into like when people want to say something, because I joke as Chris Allos gives Rich a huge thing about like Winger and stuff. But I mean, like there are certain like, okay, you want to look at like 17 and like songs like Cherry Pie and stuff. I mean, but the problem is that people only look at Cherry Pie and they only look at 17.
Right.
You know, if you took a second and you really got into, you know, Warren's catalog and, you know, songs like
Doggy Dog,
albums like Doggy Dog just albums, you know, and the songs that weren't, you know, asked to be written by the record company, you know, they were songs, you know what I mean? Like, it's obviously a little songs like Cherry Pie and 17 are a little on the, you know, cheesy side, you know, but it's also where the music was at the time and they needed a hit and they needed something that would be played on MTV.
Yeah.
But it's like, the problem is a lot of people look at that and they're like, Winger's X, Y, or Z or Warren's X, Y, or Z. But it's like, there's so many great songs that are deep within those records that if you just took
the rest of the record,
and you know what, and you know this, Rich, you know what's coming, right? If you had to say like top 10 records of ever in your whole lifetime, one of my favorite records is Winger Pull. Is phenomenal, and they still, I mean, look at Kip Winger. He's a Grammy winner, he's won a million awards, he does orchestration. Right. He's like, people don't get that. Oh, you're the guy that did 17 or Madeline. Why don't you listen to those songs really and listen to them? They're well written tuned songs. They sound great, but that pull record, and people go, oh, they're too heavy. See, you can't win, right?
So
I write 17. Oh, that's cheese. Cherry Pie, that's cheese. But then they'll write Uncle Tom's Cabin, which is phenomenal. Yes. And then they'll write like Down Incognito from Winger.
Or aside from Cherry Pie, Mr. Rainmaker, Song Dance Man.
So good. And it's like you try to explain, you know, like, because when I really got into like more of kind of like I was saying the obscure stuff from Winger, you know, I realized that they're really, I mean, they got like some prog elements to them. You know, like I love the song Rainbow in the
Rose. Oh, yeah.
Rainbow in the Rose.
So good. Right. And they got a lot of like in-depth, like proggy, like hard stuff that is in those songs. And it's funny because it's like, I love that stuff, but you know, I'm also not afraid to admit, you know, as much as anybody want to give me shit for Love and 17, I also, it's a fun song, man. Like it's a fun song. And it's just,
what's wrong with fun? Like I don't get it. Yeah, you know,
right.
I think that's what kind of killed it, because when, you know, Seattle came along, they're like, no, you can't have fun anymore.
Right.
So and what's weird is like, I always thought about this. I love Mother Love Bone. And not to be nasty, they were did you see some of the old pictures of Pearl Jam or Alice in Chains? Their hair was big. They had makeup. It was
Pantera? Pantera?
Yeah, I mean,
the other day,
I mean, before Phil was singing, they were full-on glam band. Like, you know?
Yeah, Pantera.
Let's not forget where Pantera came. Hold on. Let's not
forget. Are you about Projects in the Jungle?
Metal Magic and all those great.
There you go.
Great, dude.
There we go. Let's not forget that.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing. It's awesome. It's a great album, too. Great songs.
Great songs. And I mean, even the first singer, he went on to do Lord Tracy. You know, See You Later on Out with the Boys. Great song. Fun.
Yeah.
I think what happened was there was too many bands that started coming out later, and that's why it got the hair term and they started to, you know, it started kind of overpopulated it and it put a stigma on the rest of the band, you know, or for example, like the first Boys Now, you know, that was maybe just too much for everybody and too bland, you know.
There were great songs on that record.
Well, this is actually, yeah. If you listen to like Cry Tough, Want Some, Need Some, Look What the Cat Dragged In, those are pretty metal riffs, actually.
Oh, yeah,
Yeah, I mean, the riff of, like, Look What the Cat Dragged In, man. I mean, it's like, it's pretty.
Yeah. Yep. Same thing with Blame It On You, number one bad boy.
Yeah.
Little funny story about that record. Rich, who produced that record?
Hold on.
Put in the glass.
Small. Isn't that awesome? Produced and arranged by Rick Broud for Piranha Productions.
Okay. So, funny. They're in the studio.
Mixed by Michael Wagner, it says, though.
Michael Wagner. Funny story. Okay. Michael's from Germany, right?
Yeah.
He did this record with Key Marcello's first band. Okay. And Poison's in the studio.
Who played in Europe, if everybody doesn't know? He was on Out of This World and...
Yeah.
What's the other one? Prisoners of Paradise.
Yeah.
Prisoners of Paradise.
So, funny story. Poison's in the studio. They got 20 days to make the record. They need songs. And Wagner just did Key Marcello's band. A lot of those riffs were very much, you could see, it came from Europe. So it's like that scene, like the Scandinavian areas and Sweden and stuff, they brought a lot of influence. And Poison, I think that was great that Brett and CeCe were like, this is cool stuff. And they embodied that. They didn't like fight it, you know?
It's interesting because, you know, I look at a band too, like, you know, the shirt I'm wearing, Whitesnake, which, you know, they were, you know, and still, I mean, you look at that 87 album, which could be pinned as, you know, as glam. I mean, they obviously had the hair, you know, that Tawny Katane, which rest in peace.
Rest in peace.
So heartbreaking. It doesn't get more iconic than Tawny Katane and dancing on the hood of the Jaguar. But even
interrupt you, but let's not forget she was in Rat Back for More.
Yeah,
Back for More.
Rat, yep.
Right. That's where she first showed up. And on the Out of the Cellar cover.
And she was on the EP. It was her legs on the EP with.
Oh, that's her
legs. Yeah, the EP. That's her legs with the rats. Yep.
Rats
awesome.
On.
I forgot about that.
Yep.
Yeah. So she, I mean, she was as iconic as it comes, you know, when it came to the videos and everything from this era. But, you know, you listen to the 87 album. And I mean, there's some heavy stuff on here, you know?
That's not glam. That's
no, I mean, like you listen to even, you know, Sliding In, which they weren't quite there yet, where, you know, image wise when it's gets this record. But I mean, to me, you know, they're often, you know, pegged, you know, yeah, Whitesnake. Oh, you know, it's the glam and you're that got the big hair and Here I Go Again. And, you know, automatically I joke, you know, like I said, I get kind of shit.
Before that.
Why don't you go back to like Love Hunter? Go back to Love Hunter. See, that's the thing. I think a lot of people, they see the 87 record or Slide It In. They don't realize that David Coverdale was in Deep Purple.
Yeah.
Him and Glenn Hughes together. Oh, my God. I mean, them two together, that's like two gods in the same band. Yeah. It's just, and then, you know, Coverdale went on.
Three with Blackmore.
Yeah, I mean, and then, you know, Coverdale went on to doing Whitesnake. And if you listen to like those first three or four Whitesnake records, it's a 70s blues record. So, and I mean, look, it's 2021, right? And Coverdale is still writing great songs. He always finds great guitar players. I mean, Mick Moody, the original guys, amazing. But then Sykes, and then you get Steve I, you get
Adrian Vandenberg,
Aldridge. I mean, Doug and Reb came in and really just kept, I mean, even now with Joel and Reb, I mean, talk about a career. I mean, how can you put Whitesnake down? I mean, I don't get it.
It kind of goes back to what you were saying, Rich, about, I mean, how at that time things were starting to become a little bit oversaturated. I mean, you had stuff like, then you had a band like Guns N' Roses, which came out and didn't, you know, kind of started, which in a way it's funny because people kind of almost have Guns N' Roses as like they weren't into that. But you look at like the Welcome to the Jungle video, it's like, would you look at Axl's hair? I mean, come on.
How glammy are they? Yeah, they started out glam too.
I mean,
right.
I mean, when Tracy Guns was in the band with Axl, they were like Hollywood Rose. They were like a glam. It's funny, Rich, you said about, you know, a lot of bands came out. I saw a great thing. You guys probably saw this years ago. VH1 did like Back to the 80s and Janie Lane was on, Brett Michaels. Yeah. They're sitting at the Rainbow. Right. And I'm not sure who said it. Was it Janie or Brett? But they said something really cool. They're like, you know what happened? you know, Brett goes, we put the reel on the car at that era. But then there were a lot of B bands and C bands. And once it got to the C and D bands, like you said, it oversaturated. Well, you know what's really sad? A lot of those C and D bands and B bands were phenomenal. And that's the bands I love that probably people don't even know about, like Roxy Blue. And I mean, Every Mother's Nightmare. I mean, there was just so many. Sister Whiskey, Dana Strum from Vinnie Vincent produced that record. Flame. It was just a great, Bangla Choir. All these great bands that came out. And because, you know, they didn't come out the same time as Rat, they got pigeonholed. Oh, they're a C band. I never understood that.
90, 91, around there.
The first
one. You know, there's another one who has the anniversary today. Was the first Steelheart album.
I mean, that record's phenomenal.
The first band I thought of when you said that was, I love the band Vane. That first.
Oh, Danny Vane's great.
That first record, No Respect, that came out in 89, I think. That record is killer. And they never, they had other great records like Rolling with the Punches and some like really, great stuff that came out in that period where, you know, like you mentioned, Jack, it kind of got into the grunge era and Alice in Chains, you know, but some of those records are just fantastic, and they definitely did not get the recognition that they deserved.
Jack, do you know they were around earlier than that though? The album just came out later, right?
Vane. What, who, Vane?
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of funny. I don't know if you guys knew this. They're from San Francisco. So they grew up in the Bay Area, Exodus and Metallica, and here they are. And Danny's like a pretty boy. Like, he's awesome. He's full on into, like, you know, it's all about the look, but the songs were there. The songs were there. And imagine those poor guys having to compete. Like, you know, Metallica came down to play the Whiskey, and, you know, they're like, this is not for us, this area. We're going to go back to San Francisco, where it's interesting. So here's a band that's in there that we're playing around. And they just, you know, that she's right. That first record is,
no,
I love it.
Man. From top to bottom. Yeah. That's like, and that's one of those that goes really, really under the radar. And it's fantastic. It's fantastic. It's so good.
Love Hate. I mean, Blackout came out.
The Red Room,
Jack, I'm going to throw a little curveball at you.
Okay.
Even though they're in the family, but before they were thrown into the hair metal category, they were just a real great hard rock metal edge band. But they got a couple big hits.
Oh, right? Why Yesterday and Today? They started out as
Forget that Summertime Girls was only one song, and let's remember that they came from something else before all this stuff. You know,
Black Tiger is such a great record too.
Yes.
You realize, right? Those guys were playing the Strip before the Strip was the Strip.
They're like Starwood, man.
Yeah, they were.
They were around with Van Halen.
God bless Eddie. Eddie used to go see Menichetti and be like, I love him. So many guys, Lynch, all these guys will tell you, Dave Menichetti was an innovator. An innovator. He was easy. I mean, when Mean Street came out, people were like, what's this?
Yeah. Yep. That's another song that was on the U68 channel, too, if you remember.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's how I found out about them. But, yeah, Black Tiger.
That's great.
But the album I meant to grab with the hit was, I want to say this one. Yes, this is where they got, this is with Summertime Girls. This is where they went over the edge and they got glammy.
Yeah.
Right.
This is definitely the close out of the Hit Parade ad. Remember Hit Parade had the ad for the clothing?
Oh, yeah. It was like
and Circus.
Like, you know what's really sad? You look at that cover and two of the guys in that band are no longer with us. This is so sad.
Yeah.
Three passed away.
Oh, three. That's right.
Holy drummer. Phil,
that's right.
And the guitar player. Sad. Isn't
that so sad? Like, it's just, it makes you sad.
Yeah.
I mean, I was thinking too, maybe we could kind of go around and maybe, because I mean, we've been talking about bands this entire episode, but maybe even go around and talk about a band or two that was really, because I know you mentioned it, Jack, like Bon Jovi was one of those bands for you. But, you know, just maybe a band you still listen to a lot or has been one of your favorites that, you know, still, or even like a standout album or something to you. I mean, I know we've been talking about that a little bit, but, you know, maybe some specific examples would be cool to talk about.
Sure. Whoever wants to go first.
We'll start with you, Jack. We'll go with you.
Okay. Well, you know, I know it's supposed to be like 84, but I'm going to if it's cool to go from like 84 to like 89, 90, because I still feel that was, for me, I have to say, and he's a really dear friend of mine, I'm not just saying this, the first Lion record with Doug Aldrich.
Oh.
So, you know, it's funny because that record is just the sound, the songs, and the singer, Cal.
Which one's the first one again?
Dangerous Attraction.
Okay. I still have one of them, but not that one. I got
That's the second record.
Okay.
The first record has got the Transformer on it, a song on it. They did that movie. Remember the movie The Wraith with Charlie Sheen? The whole soundtrack was the first Lion record.
Oh, okay.
So my thing is like this. Talk about the whole, look at Cal. Oh, so amazing. So the singer was from a band called Tyrant from the UK. And he was a very Coverdale-orientated guy. And Doug even talked about it. He came over here and him and Doug put this band together. That record, to this day, will always be in my car, always be in my CD player, hands down. That is one record that I will die with on a desert island. Another record that probably a lot of people don't even know, it makes me sad. This band called Harum Scarum from Toronto should have been bigger than Bon Jovi or Def Leppard. That first debut record, Harry Hess has one of the greatest voices ever. And Peter L'Esperance, the guitar player, hands down. They took Extreme to a new level. It was like mixing Extreme and Bon Jovi and just, you know, like those two records.
You know the band?
Yes, I have heard of them. Yes, yes.
You will love them. If you get a chance, try to get their debut record or their second record. If you don't got it, I'll burn you a copy. Like Mood Swings. Wow, you're going to call me up and go, did I miss this? Because it's just, they were huge in Japan. Like, who is it? Like, you know, it's like Japan was always into, and Europe, those bands always did great over there. But it's just sad to me. Those two records, and, you know, there's so many other bands that I just love that people, who's this? Who's that? And you said Vane, which that's such a great call. Like, it's hands down. And then another band, you said like three, right? That really meant a lot to us.
However many you want. No, there's no limit. You're good.
Is it a light to cheat? Because I'm 100 years old. I just want to see something. I got to tell you, I lived in LA. I went to GIT for a little while. And the second night I was there, my friends took me to the Roxy to see a band, Cold Sweat. I said, so there's a whole story behind that. Oni Logan joined Lynch Mob. He was the original singer in Cold Sweat. He left the band and Roy joins the band. The night of their record release, I go see this band, Cold Sweat. I'm addicted. I'm like, that is awesome. And like that record, Cold Sweat, to this day, I became friends, you know, I don't like to be this guy that like, oh yeah, he's tooting his horns. He's friends with all these guys, but we're all very close now because we all just respect each other. And just to see that band out of nowhere, go, what is this? And they just blew my mind. And like that record, that first record, sonically, songwriting is up there. Another record I'll take to my grave. And the last thing I have to say is I'm a very fortunate musician. I grew up loving this music. I don't know how I got the gigs I got. Playing in Sabotage, like that to me was like a dream. And now, 1982, Al DeNova comes out with Fantasy Record. And now I'm his guitar player. I'm playing in that band. Like a band that year, the first Asia record came out, Foreigner 4 and 82 came out. I mean, 82 and Al DeNova, that record, he started a lot of that keyboards. Yeah. I mean, and now I'm learning all these songs that Al DeNova wrote. I'm going, I have to pinch myself sometimes because I'm just very lucky. I'm a fan that somehow stepped in a big pile of crap that somehow got these. I'm being honest with you. Like, I just love the music so much. And the question of rock star, you know, when I was younger, I was a little, you know, I had my moments. But as I got older, I really appreciate where I come from. And I'm so proud to be a part of that movement. And I will, you know, so to me, I would say those four or five records will never, ever leave my playlist, ever.
And I love that too. I mean, the whole thing about, you know, pinching yourself. I feel that too when I'm like, I get to interview some of these people, and it's just, yeah. And I know you feel the same way too, Rich. I mean, I get to talk to some of these people. Like, talked to Jolynn Turner, and that, like,
sweetheart.
I mean, Rich knows I've talked about it on the Hudson Valley Squares. I mean, to me, that was one, like, it was just a really big moment for me. Cause I mean, I grew up, I love Joe's stuff that he did. He did his solo stuff in like 85 and he did the stuff with Rainbow and
Endlessly.
Endlessly and Losing You and all those. It's so great. And I mean, I get to see, you know, that conversation, other people I get to talk to. I mean, it's like, for me, it's not even like I get to, it's, you know, I'm sure it's the same for you, Jack. It's not even like a job or get to do anything. It's just like, I can't believe I get to sit here and talk to these people.
We're just lucky.
I listen to their music like when I'm trying to relax and, you know, wind down and feel good. I mean, it's just, it's insane. So I totally relate to that whole thing.
And I'm just like happy to continue supporting the music too. That's what, you know, doing this is for as well. You know, the music you love, you're just supporting it.
Yeah. Not to cut you off, but it's funny. I wanted to say the story real quick before we let you guys go with the next part. I'm doing this really cool record called Brothers in Arms. And I'm not here to promote myself. That's not why I'm doing this. But
promote yourself away, dude.
Nah, I'm not. Ask Rich. I don't even have a Facebook thing. I'm just not that guy. I just don't. But I wanted to, because I'm tired of hearing that rock is dead. So yeah. I wanted to make a rock record. And then I wanted to call a bunch of my friends, that guys that I, like Keith St. John from Burning Rain, Andrew Freeman from Last in Line. I mean, Nick from Slick Toxic from Canada. So bunch of these guys, like I've been talking to the FM, a huge band from the UK. So last night I'm talking to Paul Sciarratino from Rough Cut. Calls my house at like 10 o'clock. We're talking for 2 hours, hangs up, calls me back. Goes, I got to ask you one more question. And I said to Rich, like today, I said, I can't believe I saw Rough Cut open up for Dio, like at Brendan Byrne. And I'm thinking, here's a guy say, hey Jack, if you don't like something that I'm doing, I'm like,
It just
to me, it's like, it's so great. And they treat me like, I've never been the guy that says I'm a guitar guy, because I'm far from it, but I think I'm a songwriter. And they call me up, there he is, Paul. I mean, they'll call me up and go, this is a great song. What do you want me to do to it? I'm like, to me, I'm living in a dream every day. And like last night, here's a guy that just the coolest guy. And we talked, and it just shows you how fortunate we all are to still do this. So that's all I wanted to say.
Yeah, no, I love that. Paul's so awesome too. I mean, I love, he was writing the Rock Vault thing too. And he's just great, dude.
Oh, he's great.
All right, Rich, give me some of your favorites.
All right. So I'm going to pick albums that I did not talk about earlier that I first got into when they first came out. So I'm going to go for just three random, as I look at the infamous collage of hard rock metal.
He's bringing the collage to metal from the inside, guys.
So I'm going to pick the first Slaughter album, self-titled one. Always loved that one because I like Vinnie Vincent of Asian too. When Vinnie wasn't overplaying and he, you know, played great melodies and the great solo and it was for the song, they had great songs. So the one that the second album, All Systems Go, with Mark Slaughter singing, is still a great album, I think. So I'll go with the first Slaughter. I could pick the two albums, but I'm going to go with the second album, XYZ Hungry. Because it's got one of my favorite. I love the guitar sound in the first one, but the second one, it's like a chainsaw. I love that sound. So I got to go. I still love that record. The first two are great.
They're phenomenal.
What's the third one? Liquid Fury, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
The third one. So yeah, that second one, Hungry, is killer. I love that guitar sound. Yeah. So, all right, I'll pick those two. And I'm going to go with the first Damn Yankees album.
Oh,
that's a good one.
Self-titled Damn Yankees. Ted Nugent, Tommy Shaw, Jack Blades, and Michael, how do you pronounce the last name?
Catalina. He's Italian.
He's Italian. Cortolino, I think.
Right? Yeah, it's... Yeah.
Somewhere around there. Yeah.
somewhere around there.
I should know this. I'm an Italian. What's wrong with me? So yeah, that debut, I mean, the harmonies, the melodies that those guys did, so good. And the guitar riffs are great.
Great.
You know, Jack and
it was a super group at that time, dude. I mean, they're I mean, and even like, you know, I know a lot of those videos too. I mean, yeah. I
Jack around, and Tommy Shaw together, their vocal harmonies.
Yeah, I can imagine that those were all over MTV too when those.
Oh, all over, full on.
First Day Yankees album was huge. So yeah, I love Tommy Shaw and Jack Blades' vocals on that, singing together. It looks like Corleone. Yeah. So yeah, I love that debut. I even like the second one too, but the first one I think is flawless.
Now maybe someday they'll do another one. They keep talking about it.
I hope so. The story is that there was actually a third one that they wrote and recorded some of it, but it never got finished.
Not with Tommy though. It's Damon Johnson for Brother Kane.
Oh, okay.
So he took over for Tommy, but I have so much useless information in my head. Like it's just terrible. But the funniest thing about that is I love Damon's voice. I love Brother Kane, but Tommy's register is very high up there. Yeah. Like I don't know what it would probably sound way different than what the debut and the second record would sound like, you know?
Anything else you would like to add, Rich?
I'll throw a couple other albums out there that are favorites. How about the first two. The first two Icon albums.
That's
a band that very few people know about, but wow, talk about great melodies and harmonies and hooks. Oh my God. Right?
Do you have a copy?
Oh, yeah.
I never really were in this whole family. You know, they were around, but nobody really, they didn't play them a lot on MTV. They weren't really, right? They weren't really that big to be in the conversation.
I mean, the first record, the video was
on MTV a lot.
On a lot. But you know, it's weird. They signed to Shrapnel Records, which was a guitar record. Like label.
I'm sorry, Jack. That's Rock On Through the Night. That was
Rock On Through the Night. Yeah.
Yes. Great album.
And I mean, honestly, they signed to Shrapnel, which, like I said, was more like a Vinnie Moore guitar guy's record.
Like Alpine, those guys.
Yep. And Icon Mike Varney loved them, dude. I mean,
I got lost in the shuffle.
Great record, man. Great records, both of them.
Yeah. The second one. Oh, my God. Let's see. Missing. Danger Calling, Shot in My Heart, Out for Blood. Love this album.
But you got to say that's more a Foreigner record.
It is. It is, but it's still got the guitar riffs.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But I'm just saying it's very polished.
It is. A lot of keyboards. Yeah. But
yeah. Great, though.
You don't hear about them too much. They come up every once in a while, but I feel like, yeah, kind of like they're one of those kind of underground bands that a lot of people don't really know about too much.
But they're reformed. Yeah. Yes, I read and heard that they're reformed and they're going to be working on something, right?
Yeah.
All right, cool. So I guess I'll go ahead and do my couple of picks. So the first band I have behind me that I have to talk about, if anybody knows me, they know how much I love Dokken. And I've been very fortunate to be able to get to know Jeff Pilson as well. And he's just a fantastic guy. And I mean, this album is my second favorite album, quite honestly, of all time. The Hunter is one of my favorite songs of all time.
My favorite George Lynn solo is The Hunter.
It's incredible. I mean, I look at this. I love it. Look at this. Oh, so good. So good. And good. Just that song. I mean, you know, if you want to talk about, you know, like there's still such great riffs. I mean, The Hunter, you know, you got Don't Lie to Me is a great melodic track. Lightning Strikes Again is probably like the heaviest song on this record.
Till the Living End also.
Till the Living End, absolutely, which is a closer on this. And this was, again, produced by Michael Wagner, who, you know, we were talking about that influence earlier from Europe and stuff. I mean, I don't know. And even Don, you know, spent a lot of time in Germany when he went to Germany to start working on the first Dokken record. So, you know, to kind of have that European influence a little bit. But I love this album. This is just forever. I've listened to this album a million times. I can listen to it a million more, and I just will never get sick of it. And this was one of my parents' original copies, which I don't know which one because they both had it. But that is my first. My second's from a band that honestly, I mean, I don't think should be pegged as glam metal. It's Tesla. They mostly are. They're sometimes under that moniker. I love Tesla. Did not get the credit that they deserve. Yeah. Criminally underrated, I think. I mean, this album is one of my favorite albums of all time, from top to bottom. I talked about this on the Hudson Valley Squares too. From top to bottom, you know, starts out with Hang Tough, finishes with Party's Over. I mean, it's just freaking, it's a monster record. And they were really, you know, again, we talk about a band that's kind of like t-shirts and jeans. I mean, Tesla was t-shirts and jeans, man.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Right.
More blues oriented. I mean, they were really a kind of a bluesy band. I don't know. They're often, yeah. You know, because they were in that kind of same circle as the Def Leppard and stuff. And I feel like sometimes they're pegged as kind of being a hair band, which I don't know. I love these guys. And the first three records, especially, I mean, this is the, you know, you got Mechanical Resonance before this and then, you know, Psychotic Supper. It's, they're just freaking killer. I love Tesla.
You know, it was, it's like everybody else that was in that family. It's right. the big riffs, the big hooks,
yeah.
The great singers, the big melodies. You know, it's all under the same umbrella. I think it's great. It's all in the family.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Rich will have my back on this one. If the end of the world came down and they said, you can have one band for the rest of your life, it would be Tesla for me. Hands down.
Yeah.
Favorite band since day one to today. Always, always, always. And, you know, how you said they're like pigeonholed in that. You know, they started out in Sacramento and Ronnie Montrose discovered them. He knew about Jeff Keat. They were a cover band. You picked the best record, best band of all times. Seriously.
That's my favorite album too by them.
Yeah.
Favorite band of all times.
This is one that when I was getting into this, you know, it's really funny because I was really into Def Leppard and my dad was like, this is a band that I think you're really going to like. And it's funny because for the longest time, you know, when I was kind of getting into this, I was like, I like the bands I like, whatever, you know. But it's funny because my dad gave me this album. And I listened to this, and this is what I was getting into. I was carrying Clipped Vinyl and everything. And I listened to this album, and the Great Radio Controversy is one of those records that just changed my life. Like, I, you know, listened to this album. I mean, this is one of those that I can just put it on, and, like, it's a no skip, no wanting to fast forward, you know, just a listen through album. And it also kind of takes me right, when I listen to it, it takes me right back to that first time I heard it and it was like, this is just freaking phenomenal. Like, it's timeless in my opinion.
Timeless.
They deserved, so I don't know, I just feel like they deserve so much more than they got. I feel like that they deserve to have been on the level of a Def Leppard or a Motley Crue. And I don't know. And I talked to Brian Wheat, I had him on the podcast as well. And, you know, they weren't doing the image thing at the time. And they were kind of just, they were kind of just coming out and doing the, I mean, they wore, you know, some kind of funky stuff. Cause that's what, you know, that's what you did then.
But a couple of the videos. Yeah. Just like two videos.
Yeah. I mean, like in the videos, but they kind of were just coming out and doing their thing. And I was kind of a little bit unlike the other bands at the time, but I don't know, man, I freaking love Tesla. I will talk about them forever. And then the third album I think I'm going to go with that is really kind of that I think a lot about when I think about getting into this kind of music myself is Shout at the Devil, which I don't know, I had to include this. I picked this kind of last minute.
Yeah, still, I mean, my favorite.
Look at the gatefold. Oh, it's so freaking awesome. Good. Look at them.
That's badass.
Found this because I have an original copy for my parents, but I found this one. It's an original and it's actually got still has the pentagram on it, which they eventually took.
That's an awesome condition.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. There was somebody who must have sold all of theirs because I got this one, I got Theater Pain, and I got Girls, 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 all like the same. They must have played them once and just put them away and
wow.
never opened them again. But you know, it's great. The back of the record says caution. This record may contain backwards messages. That's what it says at the bottom in fine print. I mean, this is just, it sells a sticker manufactured by Columbia House under license. It's just, I don't know. It's one of those looks that kill, you know, in the beginning into Shout at the Devil is just freaking giving
scary.
You bumps, dude. It gives
that
you
was scary at the time. Yeah. When I heard that at the time,
but yeah, I mean, this one is just, I remember listening when I was getting into this, Motley Crue is one of the first bands I really, really dived into and kind of did a deep dive of all their stuff. Cause I knew a lot of their, like the hits originally. And so when I, again, like the Great Radio Controversy, when I think about getting into this music, I think about this record. And this is another one that I think probably is my favorite. And to me, I like better than Girls, Girls, Girls or, you know, Dr. Feelgood. I mean, they were still raw here and they were still, you know, they had that kind of like scary mystery, kind of weird vibe to them.
They were hungry.
Yes. I'm sure both of you have seen the video from, God, what was it? It was 83. Was it the Us Festival?
Us Festival, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, oh, like, yeah. Killer. Because it was
They destroyed that show. Yeah, people like opening band, they just killed it. They killed it.
It's funny because, you know, growing up, I mean, I wasn't around when this came out, but I saw the same kind of experience of opening it up for the first time and going, whoa,
yeah, it's,
like, this is crazy.
That's what it was like seeing them on MTV for the Looks That Kill and Too Young to Fall in Love video.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, you're like, what's this?
Yeah, it's like watching even the first Wasp, you know, Love Machine, I Want to Be Somebody, another yeah. band. You know, visually, oh, yeah. great, like Motley Crue.
Yeah.
Didn't U68 play... Didn't U68 play Livewire?
Yeah.
Yeah, they did.
And Looks Like Him, You Don't Fall in Love, and they played both of the Wasp videos,
right.
and Wild Child, Blind in Texas.
And then the last little, like we talked about it earlier, I'm going to give a little mention to the 87 Whitesnake record.
What a monster record.
It's phenomenal. And like you said, Jack, I wouldn't even consider this under that glam. Like, and not that I wouldn't consider it glam, but I wouldn't consider it under that kind of shitty umbrella that's been given, you know, that's been put
yeah,
up.
So sad.
So sad. I mean, this is just it's heavy, you know. You hear that initial riff and like Crying in the Rain, and the riff to the Bad Boys, it's still a
Bad Boys.
I mean, oh yeah.
Doesn't it suck though?
Children of the Night as well is equally heavy.
But doesn't it suck though that the video didn't have Sykes in it? His playing on that record, he should have been in that video. He should have been on that tour. And don't get me wrong, Vandenberg and Vivian are phenomenal players. But that should have had Neil Murray and Cozy Powell, and it should have.
Yeah. So at the time that we didn't even know, you just got, you know, you got the album, then you saw the video, and nothing lined up. The same thing happened for
I See the Light Tonight.
Even for a Slip of the Tongue, too.
Yeah, right? I See the Light Tonight. We had that discussion. Remember, Rich, when we did the Yngwie episode with Pete?
That's right. Mark Scott Soto sang on the record, but Mark Bowles is in the video.
And you watch the video, and you're like, who is that?
yeah. And you didn't read about it until a month or two later when you saw it in Circus or Hip Parade or Metal.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, like, no. Nowadays, yeah, you get the article in 10 seconds on Blabbermouth.
Right.
Freaking somebody's like, makes a post, and all of a sudden it's like everybody knows. But yeah, I mean, then it's like,
but yeah,
happened.
It was a little confusing for Whitesnake when you buy the album and then you go see him live and there's two other guitar players in the whole new lineup.
Man, thank you guys so much for taking the time to join me for this. I mean, I love this freaking music so much. It's my favorite. It really is. I mean,
yeah,
I
really
love,
thank you so much.
Yeah, I mean, I love the 70s stuff. I mean, I love all rock and metal, but I mean, this era is holds a special place in my heart, so I love talking about it. So thank you guys.
I think we've talked about many bands. I don't think anyone can say that we forgot somebody, right? We talked about almost all the major players. Oh no, I'm sorry.
Oh, here we go.
Oh, here it goes.
I got one more. I forgot when we're talking about the first wave.
You pull out Billy Squire. You're gonna pull out Billy Squire.
No, ready? You guys ready? This is a good one from the East Coast. Who did I forget, Jack?
Oh, are you going to say, the sound I hear is the knife cut, switchblade,
serenade.
Come on. No,
earlier. That's Green Eagle. Earlier, the first wave, like 81 to 85.
Zebra?
No.
Were you saying East Coast?
No, East Coast, yes.
What first are you saying?
Wave, 81 to 85.
East Coast. Ooh. Well, not White Lion?
No. Because we threw them in there. We already talked about Fight to Survive. They're from, they play the M3 Festival every year and they headline.
Kix.
Oh, Kix. Yep. I mean.
Yeah. Can't forget them too, right?
That kicks off the M3 Rock Festival every Friday night.
Yeah. And they were there at the beginning too. This is what I grabbed here. This is Cool Kids. So that's what year. Do you remember? Here's the first one.
I don't know. I used to go see them at. Oh, I love it.
Steve. Yeah. Steve.
And then let me throw one more out there.
The same sounds the same.
Yeah.
Another great band and a great debut. Let's throw that out there. Let's not forget about that first King Cobra album.
That's a great one.
Yeah.
Carmine's playing on that is so.
Another great guitar sound too.
Who's that guy in the far left? What band did he go on to join in or making? Look at the top left.
Oh, that's Johnny Rod.
No. Well, Johnny Roger and Wasp. But look to the top left. Next to Carmine.
My left or your left?
My left.
I don't know. Can you see something? I can't see.
That would be the Bullet Boys.
Oh, Mike Sweeta.
That's Mick Sweeta on the top left.
Mick Sweeta.
Yep.
Nice.
I can't believe we didn't mention Billy Squire. Did I say Billy Squire?
He had a couple of his moments, a couple of his songs, right?
Oh, yeah. Let's see.
That could be in the family.
Bon Jovi, Rat, you name it, Def Leppard, they all opened up for Billy Squire. Everybody opened
Billy
up
Squire,
for Billy Squire.
I saw Billy Squire open up for Bon Jovi at John's Stadium when Skid Row was touring for their first album.
Look at that. Yeah, I think we've covered a lot of the bases, though. There's so many bands.
This is so much.
But yeah, man, this was so fun. Thank you so much to Jack Frost and Rich Catino for joining me on this week's episode of the Metal from the Inside podcast. And yeah, give a little promo. I'm going to pull a Pete Pardo today. Jack, give us a little promo. I know you talked about the record, but what else are you up to right now?
I'm getting ready to go to Canada in July. We're doing a live stream, driving Al DeNova, 2.5 hour set. We're doing all his hits and all the new stuff he's doing. So get ready. Al DeNova is going to come back strong. And like I said, I'm working on Brothers in Arms record. It's really cool. The guys, I'm nothing in that band. All the guys brought so much to the table. So that's what I'm doing. And I'm also working on a new Seven Witches record. So I'm kind of busy. And I just did Ronnie Monroe's record too, for Metal Church, ex-singer for Metal Church. I played on it. Joel Holster played on it. And Chris Caffrey played on it too. So I'm having everyone's complaining about COVID. I had the best year of my life writing and coming up with stuff. But again, thank you so much for letting me be a part of this. It's so much a part of me and my blood. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you have any idea when the new Brothers in Arms record might be out? Is there any kind of deadline? Or
September release.
September, cool. Awesome. Well,
is that the official title of the album or the collection of guys that are on it?
The name of the band is Brothers in Arms. It's called Brothers in Arms. We're talking about maybe going Welcome to the Whiskey or something like that, because the whole concept is that era. So, right. You know, we're not 100% sure yet. So don't hold me to that.
All right, cool. Well, I will share that up on here when that comes out and everything and on the site. And
thank you so much.
I'm excited to listen to it. Rich, give us a little update on the Metal Asylum and Brave Words and Sea of Tranquility stuff.
Okay. Brave Words, I always got a couple of reviews going up every week or two. So I'm not too sure what I sent in this week because there's so many things I've listened to, but I know I listened to the new Flotsam and Jetsam album and the new Vulture. They're a speed metal band. So both great albums. The new Flotsam is called Blood in the Water, and it's killer. So that's two things I'm working on, either for Brave Words or Metal Asylum, depending where it goes. And Metal Asylum, we do our Facebook Live interviews every week or every other week. So check that out on Facebook. And Sea of Tranquility, I think the next thing I'm doing is, I gotta think for a second. I think the ranking of the Blind Guardian albums in about a week, I think. So I'm looking forward to that. You know, one of the big power metal giants.
And of course, I'm always here every single Friday on the Metal from the Inside podcast. Once again, thank you so much, Jack. And thank you so much, Rich. This was so much fun. Yes. And yep. I will see you guys next week for a brand new episode. You guys just finished listening to episode 41 of the Metal from the Inside podcast, featuring myself, Jack Frost, and Rich Catino talking all things 80s hard rock. I hope you guys enjoyed listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed putting it together. Be sure to let me, Jack, and Rich know what your favorite 80s glam metal bands are. There are so many bands that went under the radar and were so underrated during that time period that I would love to know your favorites. And if you have any bands that you think deserved more recognition or, you know, more notoriety during that time period. And, you know, you may just surprise me with a band that I don't know about. So be sure to let Jack, Rich, and I know. You can, of course, tag Metal from the Inside in any posts telling us, and I will definitely let the guys know if you do so. But if you guys really loved what you heard and are interested in donating to the Metal from the Inside podcast, you can go to www.anchor.fm/ /metal from the inside. Here you can click on the support button and donate either $1, $5, or $10 a month directly to the podcast. Every single dollar that I receive goes directly back into the podcast so I can continue to create even better content for you guys. And like I always say, every single episode, there is no donation required to listen to the podcast. We are available for 100% free on Spotify, Apple, Amazon Music, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Anchor, CastBox, literally wherever you listen to your podcasts. There is no donation required to listen. It is 100% free, but I always like to have the option there for those who may be interested. But if you would like to donate to the podcast and receive something in return, you can purchase Metal from the Inside merchandise, like I mentioned in the introduction to this episode. You can go to www.season-of-mist.com, type Metal from the Inside into the search bar, and our flame logo tee will pop right up. Here you can purchase Metal from the Inside merchandise in all different styles, including zip-ups, hoodies, muscle tanks, tank tops, women's fit shirts, t-shirts, and anything that your heart desires. So that is where you can purchase Metal from the Inside merchandise. And again, the proceeds for that shirt go directly back into creating even better content for you guys. So that is how you can purchase official Metal from the Inside merchandise. If you'd like to stay up to date with the Metal from the Inside podcast, the best place to do so is on Metal from the Inside's website, www.metalfromtheinside.com. We are also on Instagram at Metal from the Inside and on Twitter at MFTIOfficial. You can also like our official Facebook page of the same name. If you'd like to stay up to date with me, Sydney Taylor, in real time, you can follow me on Instagram at Sydney Anna Taylor and on Twitter at STaylorOfficial. I'm always here to chat hard rock and heavy metal with you guys, so don't be shy. Message me, tweet me, all that fun stuff, and I'll get back to you guys as soon as I possibly can. Thank you guys again so much for being so understanding with my short little absence here on the podcast. There is a lot of cool content that is coming up that I have been working on behind the scenes. And not only am I here on the podcast, I am also a frequent guest on Pete Pardo's Sea of Tranquility YouTube channel. I am on the Hudson Valley Squares talk show every single Monday night. The episodes usually go live around 10:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I am also a writer for Brave Words. So if you guys would like to check out some of my reviews, I just recently reviewed Mammoth WVH's debut record, which is stellar. I would love to have Wolfgang on the podcast, but I just reviewed that record. So if you guys would like to check out that review and others that I have written for Brave Words, be sure to go to Brave Words' website and check it out. There are many avenues you guys can find me on, and I have a lot of ideas brewing, so stay tuned. Thank you guys so much again for listening to episode 41 of the podcast. Be sure to let me, Jack, and Birch know your favorite 80s glam bands, and we will be back next week with Mr. Don Jameson to chat all things hard rock and heavy metal. Stay tuned. We'll be right back here next Friday for episode 42 of the Metal from the Inside podcast. I'm your host, Sydney Taylor. Stay safe, take care of yourselves, spin your favorite hard rock and heavy metal record for me, and I will be back right here next week. Rock on.